You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. Now, if you guys haven't had the opportunity to check out the Navigator Series, it's a brand new lineup from Lacrosse. They have the Windrose for men and women. They also have the Atlas, and that's what I wore during my rut vacation this fall. Check them out. They're very comfortable. It's a traditional rubber boot, kind of mixed with a traditional hunting hiking boot. They've mashed it together, and the outcome is the Navigator Series. Check it out at lacrossefootwear.com.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and this show is designed to educate and inspire hunters to head west for a backcountry big game hunt. Join us in our journey as we educate and inspire ourselves, as well as others, to be prepared for the hunt and to never stop learning. The Backcountry Rookies Podcast is proudly brought to you by Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting, Go Hunt, and Onyx Hunt Maps. The Elk 101 University of Elk Hunting is the most comprehensive elk hunting education platform you can get. From learning and knowing how to call elk to packing an elk out of the woods, University of Elk Hunting has it all. Use the code ROOKIES and save $20 on your membership today. Go Hunt is the fastest, most accurate way to plan for a hunt. Go Hunt Insider gives you draw odds, statistics, in-depth unit analysis, interactive maps, historical weather patterns, and much more to help you plan for that upcoming hunt. Use the code ROOKIES when you purchase Go Hunt Insider and get $50 in store credit to use in the Go Hunt gear shop. And finally, Onyx Hunt Maps, know where you stand. Use Onyx Hunt to share crucial map information with your hunting partners and stay on track in the field. Use the code ROOKIES and save 20% on your premium or elite membership today. Hey, welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. So today, I have on Jay Scott, and if you're not familiar with Jay Scott, I invite you right now to go jump on Instagram and look at Jay Scott Outdoors. And the reason why I invite you to do that right now is because we actually use some of the posts from Jay's Instagram page later on in the show. Jay does a really good breakdown of how you should be glassing for coos deer and mule deer when you're hunting in Arizona and out in the Southwest. And he does it by just kind of drawing some pictures, you know, and drawing overlays on top of some actual photographs that he's taken, or some of it is pulled from his Onyx account, where he does an overlay and he kind of talks about how you should be glassing and what time of day you should be looking in which direction. And we cover all of that stuff in this show. So there's a ton of good information. And if you're really curious and you want to kind of follow along, have your Instagram ready and check out Jay's Instagram post. There's a few of them. You'll see them on there. Like I said, they're overlays, and you can see where he's drawn some arrows and pictures and things on top of other pictures. So they'll kind of stand out on his feed. And, yeah, so Jay Scott, the purpose of the show was myself and Jordan are going to be heading out to Arizona in January for some archery coos deer. And we wanted to bring on somebody to talk about that and, you know, just kind of how we should approach it and how we should try to be getting it done. And Jay is he was one of the first people that came to mind when I thought about coos deer hunting and hunting Arizona. So it's a real pleasure to have him on. It's pretty cool. Like I said, Jay Scott Outdoors is his Instagram, and go check that out. If you're not already following it, then make sure you jump on there and give him a follow. Here we go. Jay Scott talking about coos deer and mule deer in Arizona. All right, welcome back to the show. So today we have I consider this a special guest, especially considering the topic that we're going to be talking about today, and that is mule deer and coos deer in southern Arizona. So we're lucky enough, I've asked Jay Scott to come on the show, and we were able to pull Jay off the side of the mountain. What have you been doing out there on the side of the mountain, Jay?
You know, I got back from the Ott 6 Ranch. Chad, first of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. Looking Absolutely. Forward to this episode. I got back from the Ott Six Ranch in Colorado at the end of October, and I've basically been scouting every day for bighorn sheep. I've got a couple of great tags coming up, guided hunts coming up here December 1st in Arizona is when our sheep season starts. And so I've been just basically scouting Monday through Friday since I've been back, and been just out there pounding the hills looking for big rams, and really enjoying my time here in Arizona. You know, I spend September and October in Colorado at the ranch, and it starts to get pretty darn cold towards the end of October. And I'm a desert rat, you know, from Arizona here, the Phoenix area. And so it's always nice to get back here and get back to the sunshine. You know, it's funny, today we actually, the last couple of days we've had pretty good rainstorms have moved in. They're predicting kind of widespread inch rains all across the valley here, and going to finish up probably tomorrow night. So we've been super, super dry, and it's been fun looking at rams, and I'm looking forward to this rain and all of the good that it's going to do for our animals over the next, you know, coming year. A good soak of rain like this sure helps the desert.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be awesome. So is that your, we'll get to deer in a minute, but now I'm very curious about rams. is that your tags, or are you guiding for people?
No, I'm guiding. I've got two hunters, and then my hunting partner, his son has a tag over in Western Arizona. So we actually are stacked up this year with bighorn sheep tags. And, you know, that's something I started late to the game guiding bighorn sheep. I didn't start till 2009. And I've been fortunate since 2009 not to have missed a season since then. And, you know, once I really got to photographing and videoing and looking at these rams in 09, they just got under my skin, and just really look forward to November and December where I can get out in the, you know, the deserts of Arizona and look at these rams. And they're a real photogenic animal. You know, I'm used to hunting coos deer where, you know, they catch any sign of you, whether they see you, smell you, hear you, whatever, they're gone. Whereas sheep are a little more tolerant. They'll let you get a couple hundred yards, 300-400 yards, take some videos, some pictures. And as long as you don't kind of encroach into that, you know, zone where they feel safe, they'll stand there and let you photograph them. So, you know, from the standpoint of getting to enjoy the interaction with animals, they're pretty neat. Whereas coos deer, you know, and our desert mule deer for that, you know, they're so aware of their surroundings and they're so skittish that it really makes it fun when you get an animal that will kind of stand there and let you take some shots at them.
Yeah, that's fun. And they are cool too. I mean, I've never been that close to one, but seeing photos of them, they're just beautiful looking. So that's pretty neat.
They are an amazing animal for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into the topic at hand here that I'm curious about. And that is not necessarily coos deer. I want to kind of talk about both coos and muleys. And the reason I want to talk both is because Arizona's deer tags in December and January is any antlered deer. So if you come across an antlered deer, you can shoot it. And is that December and January? Is there also a November any antlered?
Nope. It's pretty much just December and January. There's also an August season. That's a couple weeks long that runs, I want to say, like the end of the second week, maybe start of the third week of August, up into September, usually before the elk hunts, usually till, say, you know, the 11th or 12th, 13th, somewhere in there of September. We've got an early season. Most of the deer are still in velvet. But, you know, the beauty of the December, January seasons, both for, like you said, for any antler deer, both coos and mule deer, is that you can come hunt Arizona over the counter with a bow, and you know, you get to hunt them in the peak of the rut. Not to be misunderstood with, you know, our Arizona Strip and the Kaibab, you know, north of the Colorado River where our big giant mule deer are, those deer rut. It's a lot higher in elevation, and it's higher in, you know, it's further north up in our state. So they actually rut in November. They're rutting right now. But for the most part, the rest of the deer in the state of Arizona, both coos and mule deer, pretty much rut from Christmas through the end of January and even into the first week of February. So for sure, the January portion of the OTC archery hunts fall right smack dab in the peak of the rut. So someone can come, even residents or non-residents can come and just buy a tag over the counter and be getting to experience, you know, deer losing their minds, chasing does, you know, bucks just following does and fighting with each other. And, you know, whereas most hunts, you don't get to hunt during the peak of the rut. Elk, we do a little bit. Wild turkey, we do a little bit. But, you know, the archery season in the month of January specifically is just, I mean, smack dab when they're going nuts.
Okay. So that was going to be my lead-in question, was when's the best time to go? And it sounds like January is when it's kicking off. It's going to be the best.
Yeah, so,
and
I
is
mean,
that
you
for,
have, yeah, go ahead.
Is that for mule deer and coos deer? Are they both rutting at the same time, or do they run on different cycles? And
yeah, a little bit. So the mule deer are going to rut just a smidge earlier than the coos deer.
Okay.
The mule deer are going to start right around the 20th of December. You know, as you're around kind of the Phoenix area, and maybe the Tucson area, you know, it's maybe going to start maybe after Christmas. You get some of the units up around Prescott, Payson, some of the more central, a little bit higher in elevation, they may start just a smidge earlier. Normally those OTC archery hunts start roughly like the 13th, 14th, 15th of December. And the rut action for the mule deer is maybe a few of the small bucks are just starting to trail does. But as a general rule of thumb, the mule deer are going to rut, and they're going to start and finish about a week and a half to 2 weeks before the coos deer. Now, there is quite a bit of overlap, and especially when you get those deer that are in the first and second cycles. So, but if you want widespread rut for both animals, mule deer and coos, pretty much from January 1st till about the 25th of January is probably prime time. Mm-hmm. Where if I had to narrow it down and say when is the best 2 weeks absolutely for both, I would probably say like on a normal year, like the 5th, 6th, 7th of January through about the 22nd, 23rd, 24th of January is like the just prime 2 weeks.
Well, that's good to hear. So this is kind of off topic, and I was thinking about this while you were talking. How does the moon affect that? So this year there's a big full moon, like right in the middle of that prime time that you just talked about.
Yeah. So the moon this year is full on January 10th. Mm-hmm. It's a headache. It's an absolute headache. In my mind, the 10th of January cannot be a worse day for the moon to be full when you're talking about deer hunters that are trying to get on active deer. So this year in particular, that moon is going to be a problem for all of us. You know, it's going to be so bright at night. What that does is those deer are chasing does and what have you at night, and then they're going to be a little more lethargic at first light. But what it does is it creates kind of, you know, 10 o'clock or so, they've chased does all night, gotten active all night. Then they kind of lay down right before it gets light, and they lay for a couple hours. And then it seems like around 9:30, 10 o'clock, right during the middle of the day, you'll see deer up moving, chasing, you know, pushing does. And then around 4 o'clock, you're going to get deer laying back down because they know they're going to be up, you know, as soon as the sun goes down and the moon comes up. So it kind of takes those prime time hours of glassing where you've got sun up to say, you know, 10 a.m. and then you've got about, you know, probably 4 p.m. to dark. That's kind of prime time glassing. When you get a full moon situation, normally it kind of limits those hours and it's not quite as good at prime time and becomes actually a little bit better during the day. And, you know, ideally, I would love to see January 10th be completely dark moon. That would be, if you ask me, ideally what I would wish for. But to be honest, the best would be about January 15th, completely dark moon. That would give you the deal where all the deer would be on their feet pretty much all day long because it's super black out at night and they're going to be bedded at night. That's ideal conditions. So this year we're faced with a little bit of a trial, so to speak. And You know, you just got to be diligent and kind of know that, you know, if you're not seeing deer in that first hour, they're probably right there embedded. You just got to be patient.
So you're saying sleep in, have a big breakfast, glass a few hours during the day, back at camp for a big dinner. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, the reality is, honestly, yes. So, but, you know, as type A as most of us are that want to get out there and charge, we'll never do that. But, I mean, the reality is, yes, around that January 10th, if you literally didn't get out there till, you know, 8:45, 9 o'clock in the morning, I think you'd be just fine. And if you just plan on glassing till, you know, 4 o'clock, your deer count numbers of spotted deer is probably going to be just as high as the guy that pounds it, you know, at prime time. Now, if you hunt all day, your numbers are probably going to go up. But if you just wanted to catch the most activity during a full moon, I would definitely, consider that, you know, 9 to 10 through, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock is your prime time.
Okay, so if you had to change, right, if you were looking at that full moon, and so I'll tell you, I'm planning on going out there around the 11th and staying through around the 20th. If I needed to, is that a better time as that full moon is coming up and then going away? Or would you recommend being out there ahead of that full moon?
I would probably go late this year. If I had to pick, I would probably go late. You know, I think the 11th through the 20th is fine because you're going to catch those great days, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. You're going to catch that, as the moon's going down. So, you know, I think, you know, the other thing that plays against it though, is if we have a cold snap and the weather is cold for our area, it's going to make those deer active. The only thing that will really kill us is if it's hot and dry and it's a full moon. If we've got nice cold temperatures, I don't think the moon's going to play as big a role in it as, you know, as I'm saying.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Very good tips. Let's see. How about sitting over water or spot and stock? What's better there?
Well, I think it depends totally on, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before the hunt. What kind of moisture levels have we had, and are all the drainage bottoms, you know, are all the potholes full of water, and can those deer basically get water anywhere they go? If it's dry and you monitor it and there's, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before the season, there's virtually been no storms. And when you get here and you're out prowling around, go check out those first thing, go check out the creek bottom drainages. And if there's just puddle, 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 you know that everywhere those deer are, they can easily get water. If you walk those drainages and there's literally no puddles, you know, then sitting water can be super effective. The other thing is later in the season, as you know, you get that 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th of your stay, they're going to just be rutting more and more and more. And so they're going to be more active, more on their feet, more moving around. And when they do that, they need more water. So if the rut is lackluster and when you're glassing, you're not seeing much rut activity, the water sitting is probably going to be a little slow. If you're seeing bucks really actively chasing other bucks and bucks chasing does really hard, it's just like you and me, when you go for a long run or a big hike, it just seems like you're more thirsty. Mm-hmm. If you know, the more active you are, the more moisture you need. So, you know, I think sitting water can be a huge, if you find a tank or a spring or somewhere that's, you know, getting pounded and the tracks dictate that, you know, they're really hitting it and consistent, then I think it's great to sit. You know, on the other hand, you know, I love glassing them up. I love spotting them. I love trying to make a plan and trying to figure them out and monitoring, watching what they're doing, trying to establish a pattern, and then trying to make an ambush on those deer. But I think you can blend your hunt and do, you know, glass primetime hours and then sit during the day. And I think that's a great, great combination and pretty deadly.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the differences of coos deer versus mule deer. And the first thing I want to talk about is maybe you don't know the answer to this. I don't know. Maybe you do. But why do the coos deer live so far up in the mountains and then the mule deer just run those bottoms and those flats that you find out there?
I think that's a good question. I think that's one of the questions I have on my laundry list. Someday when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask the big guy upstairs why the coos deer run in the beautiful mountains and the mule deer typically run in the wash bottoms and the lower elevations. And the answer is, I don't really know, other than it's absolutely true that coos deer typically inhabit, you know, that 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 foot elevation range. They inhabit what I call that real pretty country, the yellow grass, the mesquites, you know, the ocotillo, the oaks. They run that real pretty ground, where the mule deer typically are more on the desert floor. And then the flip side of that is also you can find some areas where mule deer are up, you know, above 6,500 feet. So, you know, I don't know why that is, but the coos deer in especially the Arizona mountain chains and New Mexico, it seems like the prettiest yellow grass, oak, mesquite country, that's where the coos deer will be. And then you take, you know, the ironwood, Palo Verde, kind of granite bottoms and sandy bottom washes, that's where the mule deer will be.
Okay. And I guess, so maybe they just like the different feed, I guess, because I could only imagine there's totally different food up there on the side of a mountain at 6,000 versus the floors.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the exact biological reason why coos deer inhabit the mountains and mule deer. And I just know that it is true.
Yeah, okay. So then food, I mentioned food a second ago. What is, well, you already said it, the ocotillos and those that brown grassy, golden grassy kind of stuff. Is that, is that where you find them eating, is in those ocotillos and in that area?
So if you're asking about coos specifically,
yeah we'll talk coos.
Yeah, so the coos are going to be in those yellow grass ridges where the south facing slopes are yellow, and then the north facing and east facing slopes are more the oaks and the mesquites. So you know, you run from the desert, most Sky Island mountains here in Arizona, you run from, like, you know, the desert floor. I mean, you spent some time out in Fort Huachuca, so you know what I'm talking about. It's like desert floor. Then it finally rises up just a little bit and you start getting into more of that yellow grass. Mm-hmm. You start getting into, you know, the ocotillo is kind of the first thing you get to. And then you get up into the mesquites, then you get up into the oaks, then it goes up into the pines. You know, those deer are historic browsers, and, you know, they're just browsing on, you know, all of that stuff that's in their zone. Whereas the mule deer, they're going to be more down, you know, on the desert floor, eating Palo Verde, eating ironwood, eating barrel cactus, prickly pear fruits, you know, and that type of stuff.
Gotcha. Okay. Very good. Let's see. So, okay, one thing that I wanted to really talk about, and this is what keyed me in, and one of the reasons why I reached out to you for this, was recently you've been putting out on your Instagram page, you're doing a lot of glassing tips, optics tips, how to glass, and I wanted to kind of go through that. So what are, and I'll just, so Jay's Instagram page, if you don't know it, it's Jay Scott Outdoors, all one word, and he's got some really good diagrams that he's built. And I kind of like to talk through those. You mentioned one already with the grassy south-facing slopes and the shaded, wooded north-facing slopes. Can you talk about that, like picking those apart and why they live on those areas?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, talking about mule deer and coos deer, I think one thing, and most animals in general, that people need to understand, that if they can look for these animals in an area where they have a higher probability of being. In other words, if you're looking for a coos deer and you are looking where they spend most of their time, you're going to have better success with your spotting. Your spotting numbers are going to go up dramatically if you're looking in the right spot. If you're not looking in the right spot, you're not going to see as many animals. One of the things that I've learned from doing this for a long, long time, you know, basically since 1996, so 23 years of, you know, intensely glassing and for these animals, is they're going to seek shade pretty much every afternoon. So they want to be sitting on the shaded side of the hills and laying down, resting in the shade. It's very uncommon to find mule deer and coos deer bedded in the complete sun with the afternoon sun beating on their head. So if hunters in general, and this goes for elk as well, but if hunters in general would get to where they glass, so they put the sun at their back in the morning where the sun is rising in the east, they put the east rising sun at their back, and they're looking at east-facing hillsides, okay? And south-facing hillsides is fine because the sun is lighting all of that up. And then after about the first hour, if hunters will transition to realizing that those animals, after about the first hour, are going to start slipping into the cuts, into the drainages, into the draws, where the east-facing and north-facing slopes are, which are typically the more thick slopes where there's more vegetation, that's where they're going to gravitate towards, because they want to, just like you and I, when it's hot out, we want to go in the shade. If you have a chance to stand in the sun or stand in the shade, you're going to stand in the shade almost every time. If you wanted to take a nap and it's hot out, you're not going to lay down in the sun. You're going to go find some shade and lay down there. That's the same thing with deer. So what I see a lot of people doing is in the afternoon, they put the western, so the sun is out, you know, it's moving towards the west because it's going to set in the west. They put that at their back. So now they're looking at the bright side of the hill, which, yes, their optics illuminate the animals. And yes, when they do see an animal, it pops out. But the problem is they're looking on the complete wrong side of where most of the animals are.
So you want to look into the sun instead of
away from it. So in the morning, you want the sun at your back for about the first hour. And then as the sun gets higher and higher in the sky, you have to realize that you need to focus most of your efforts onto shady slopes. And then as that sun keeps at noon and it keeps sliding going west, now it's creating, when you look at hillsides, it just creates natural shade. The hill itself creates the shade, and the animals are, the majority of animals, especially deer, are going to be on that shady side. Now, it can be a little shallow cut. It can be a deep, steep face that creates tons of shade. It doesn't really matter. It's just 9 times out of 10, if you glass in the afternoon with the sun in your face, that's going to put you looking at east and northeast facing slopes. The opposite of that would be you'd be looking at west and south facing slopes, the more open slopes. Well, yes, you will see some deer, but the majority of your deer will be anywhere where there's shade. So, I always in the afternoon am glassing with the sun in my face, and so that I'm looking, and it's hard. You have glare and it's harder to do, but that's where the deer are going to get up the quickest. They're going to stay bedded on the sunny side where it's hot a lot longer than if you've got a shaded slope and they've been bedded there for several hours, and now you're on the shaded slope. How many times have you been hiking up a hill, and you're on the sunny side, and it's super hot, and then you hit a shaded cut, and it's like, wow, it dropped, you know, it feels like it dropped 10 degrees. It's no different from the deer. So a lot of times I can find deer in the afternoon that are up feeding way before they're going to be up feeding on any of the sunnier slopes.
Gotcha. Do you ever?
So what I try and do on the Instagram is I try and take pictures of country and kind of describe what I'm seeing. And then I also try and take my Onyx maps with the, you know, there's the topo, the aerial, and the hybrid mode, mm-hmm. and try and show how I would glass certain bits of country because I've been doing it so long. And so most of the time I make a plan that I've got, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 glassing points that I'm going to hit. I may only glass one, but I have strategically looked at a map and said, where is the shade going to be? where do I expect the deer to be? That's not to say that I don't find a deer on a south facing slope or a west facing slope. It just most of the animals are going to be on those shady slopes.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay. So there's a picture that you have on here. Let me find it again. Same one I was talking about earlier, where you have a big triangle kind of drawn around the shade. In the background of that picture, there's a really rocky, steep face, almost something where you would see a ram or a goat or something out there. Do those deer ever hang out on those real rocky faces, or are they more likely to be down in the shade that rock might be?
So the rocky peak in the background, absolutely there will be deer there. And keep in mind, deer only need, you know, a tree or two or a cactus or two to create shade. They're not very big animals, but, you know, they spend a lot of time. It's really hot here in Arizona, and so they get really habitual about knowing where the coolest places to lay on the mountain are. That goes back to that triangle that I circled in yellow. That's a predominant shady slope in the afternoon. That doesn't change day after day. That's always shaded in the afternoon. Well, guess what? Years of experience, I've found that those predominant shaded slopes, the ones that face east and northeast, are almost always have more deer on them, especially in the afternoons, than the other faces. That's not to say that that rocky slope in the background, that there can't be a nice canopy of oak trees up there and those deer feed out in the opens. And then they slip in there to those trees and lay down. That's not saying that at all, but it's saying if you find those big predominant shaded ridges, that's where they're going to be. And then one thing I want to add with that on the mule deer, typically, you know, we talk about the mule deer living more in the flats and in the washes and in the sandy bottoms. Those sandy bottom washes, you know, in some of our units around Phoenix and around Tucson, you can get up on cone peaks and knobs and be glassing down into those ironwood and Palo Verde choked draws and find those thick stands of trees where there's big, thick ironwoods. Well, likely they'll just be on the shaded side of that tree. So you can use the shade principle with all types of glassing. It doesn't necessarily have to have a shaded ridge. Look on the, if you're glassing out across a flat, start making your eye look at the shaded side of the tree before the sunny side of the tree. And all of a sudden you'll start picking out deer that are just literally laying on the desert floor with the shade of a tree. Another thing to keep in mind is the shade of a tree. A lot of times they have to get up and re-bed 4, 5, 6, 7 times during a day because the sun keeps shifting from east to west, and it's, they were in the shade, now they're in the sun, and so they just have to get up and move over like 2 feet. And I've literally seen them just work their way around a tree until finally they get up and feed for the afternoon.
That makes total sense. Now, when you find, well, let's move on. So there's another picture, the next picture actually. If you're looking at your Instagram, this one you have roads outlined and some white lines in there to indicate, I think that's just your ridge lines. And then you've got your north face, south face.
Right.
This was on November 9th. How about that? So if anybody's listening and you want to go back and you want to check out these pictures, November 9th is what we're looking at right now. So is it productive to find, well, I know a lot of truck hunters will just sit on the road, right? They're not going to get out of that pickup. They're going to glass from the car. Or their truck. But if you went a couple of those ridge lines over and you were able during the morning, you're able to glass one side of the ridge, and then in the afternoon you can turn around and just glass the other direction. Is that effective too?
Absolutely. I love ridge lines. I love ridge lines of all sorts because it gives you a two-faceted approach. In other words, you can work a ridgeline and you can be looking at the thick side if you look, let's say, off your left side, or you can be looking to your right side and it's going to be an open face ridge. So you can either, you know, whichever end you start at, you can work down a ridge and look at open and thick. And sitting on one ridge top, you can glass for 30 minutes and literally just spin or move 3 feet and shift and look the exact opposite direction, now you're looking at open country. Mm-hmm. And you can just bounce up a ridge, you know, in 2 or 3 hours, I can move, you know, 4, 5, 6 times and hit completely different country, you know, pan a bunch of country over, let's say on your left side, spin around, glass everything on your right side, then move up 150 yards and hit everything on your left side, hit everything on, you know, mm-hmm. and just keep doing that. And you'll find out real quick, okay, today these deer are really in this type of terrain, or, you know, the last 3 days, all of the deer have been over on this side. Well, what I've found is, especially when it's warm and in the warmer months, and even in the rutting time when it's and when it's warm, those deer are going to most always, they're going to feed out in the opens for the first hour, and then boom, they're going to pile over those ridge tops and get down in those shady pockets. So again, you know, focus on shade in the afternoon and you're going to find way more deer.
So do the deer, you're saying when they go over the ridge tops to the other side, do you ever see them travel, like on this particular picture in the bottom right corner of it, you can see where those two valleys kind of come together in the bottom. So would they more likely go up over the top of that ridge, or would they go and stay down in the bottoms and work their way around?
No, I mean, normally they're going to be pretty close to the top of the ridge line, so they don't have to go very far to go back over the top and do some feeding,
yeah,
and then repeat the process of dumping back over on the thick side. But, you know, you'll get deer that want to go get a drink of water, and let's say it's been dry and they've got to walk, you know, 3/4 of a mile to water. So that's where, if you are scanning some of the south facing and some of the open, you can catch a lot of deer in the open. I have people tell me all the time, well, I see more deer in the open stuff than the thick stuff. And I say, well, yeah, because there's nothing to hide them. They're in the wide open. Yeah. But if you effectively can look into where they spend more of their time, and I can't tell you how many people send me a message. They're like, I started really focusing on shade, and my numbers of deer over the course of a season sightings have gone way up, because you're right. You know, I've been rewarded. My eyes have been rewarded by seeing stuff in the wide open, because they're easy to see because there's nothing to block them. But then once I started focusing on the thick stuff, my numbers went up, and I'm like, well, yeah, because you're looking where they spend more of their time.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Ridgelines are awesome because you can cover lots of country. You can look off both sides, and you can do it relatively quickly. And then you can hop over and go right down the next ridgeline. So all you have to do is walk up one. You get all the way to the top of one. You cross down, get up on the next ridge. Now, granted, you're glassing the backside of what you just looked at, but then when you flip over to the other side, you're looking at a whole new piece of country. Mm-hmm. You can work all the way down that ridge. I mean, I've worked country where in one day I've worked, you know, 3 or 4 different ridge lines. And, you know, I've done it also where I've spent, you know, 3 days on one ridge line. But it gives you height advantage. It gives you an optical advantage where you've got, I always like looking, being higher and looking down and across than being down and looking up, because I think it opens up the vegetation. If you're looking up the vegetation, those deer are only, you know, waist high. Well, vegetation is going to cover them up. But if you're above them looking over the bushes, it just opens up that optical advantage for you.
Right. Right. Okay. I'm glad to hear that about the ridgelines, because that's what I've really been scouting and looking a lot. There's a lot of areas down there in southern Arizona that are that way, where it's just ridgeline after ridgeline.
Yeah.
It's like waves, and I like, you know.
I like too, Chad. I like those waves of ridgelines, but I also like where it kind of goes like a ridgeline up to kind of a cone knob, and then it goes kind of down to another, and then goes up to another knob. So you get kind of those long walks where you can be looking off both sides. Then you get up to, you know, say it's 100 or 200 feet higher, and now you've got a big cone knob advantage. Then you keep going, and you've got more ridge line that you could walk and looking off both sides. And you know, that's the key is gaining optical advantage at all times in your deer numbers, and looking in the right place where the deer spend most of their time. That those two things are going to help you find more animals.
Yeah. That's perfect. Okay, last one we'll hit here. You posted, it looks like yesterday, it says 20 hours ago, so we'll go with the 19th, I think, if you, for the listeners. You have an example of how I would hunt a particular coos deer basin, and here are the steps. And then you go through to define them, which is one, find water, two, different glassing options, and I'm paraphrasing all this, so different glassing options, and then you have a line mark that's your path of travel and your approach in and kind of how you move throughout, and then you have marked multiple glassing options. So that's a phenomenal picture. I think you are giving everybody a great recipe there, so thanks for that.
Do you have a specific question about that, or do you
not at all? I'm simply pointing it out because I think there's so much information in there that if you could almost find those exact locations all over Arizona, southern Arizona at least, and you're telling people right there, this is how you need to be looking into them. So I'm going to put this into play.
I think the main thing, Chad, with doing these is, so if you notice that yellow line, you notice it's on the what I would call going up that ridge, it's kind of on the right side, or it's on the downhill side of the ridge. That's my approach up to the top main ridge. I had some guys ask me, well, why are you on the bottom side? Well, I don't want to spook the basin that I'm glassing, so I'm going to use the contour of that ridge line. I'm going to stay below that ridge. Yes, I'm going to spook anything in that little ravine, but I'm going to eliminate as much area of disturbance as I can, and I'm going to walk up that crack or that cut on the bottom side of the ridge line. So in other words, they can't see me or hear me. The ridge is blocking them from sight and blocking my sound. And then I'm going to pop up on that glassing knob number two, and then I'll have a huge optical advantage, but they won't know I'm there because I walked up that one ravine, but there's a whole bit of country that did not get disturbed. And part of my description was, I always like to have, every morning when I go out and every evening, I like to have two or three options of where I'm going to glass. You never know when you get to your first spot and you're like, this isn't as good as it looked on a map. And now what do I do? Well, if you have, well, let's go check out number two. Let's go check out number three. You have a plan.
Yep.
Okay. The other thing is, for whatever reason, you may get up there on glassing knob number one and there's somebody there. So you say, hey, sorry about that. Didn't know. I'm going to go ahead and go to another spot. The worst thing I think guys can do is just willy-nilly go into country and not have like a strategy and have a plan of how am I going to look at this country. And that's where that Onyx Maps works so well for me, because I can just text, you know, share right there on the app. I can share my waypoint, my three glassing points with you, and I can say, I'm going to start at one, I'm going to hit two, and I'm going to go to three. And, you know, if you're looking for me and you can't find me, I'm going to be at one of those three glassing points. I can even text you my route, just like that map. I can text you that entire map of the route that I'm going to walk, all of that. And it's, you know, I think guys, if they can gain optical advantage, if they can look into where the deer are, and if they can kind of, from more of like a, I look at, I'm not military. You are, appreciate your service. But I look at all of these like a military strike. Like, I seriously have clients that are like, wow, you get really into this. I'm like, yeah, I act like these deer are going to shoot back at me. So what do? I'm going to get where they don't see me. I'm going to get where they don't hear me. I'm going to pop up on my glassing point number two, and they're never going to know I'm there. I kind of think like if I were a sniper and I didn't want to get shot at, how would I do this?
Yeah. Well, that's a heck of a way to look at it, for sure. So that is fantastic. And I wanted to bring to people's attention that you're doing this. I'm sure a lot of people that listen to the show have already seen it, but if they haven't, then it's out there. So you're building those graphics and you're putting them out. The last thing I wanted to ask you was about mountain thermals and how much effect do they have in that southern Arizona.
Well, I think the thermals are huge. You know, obviously the wind is huge, especially when you're bow hunting, especially when you're trying to get close to those animals. But the thermals more than anything, you're looking for the predominant wind direction. Okay. And yes, the thermals do play, and yes, it does get cold and it gets warm. So you have a huge fluctuation in temperature. Okay. And so, yes, it is going to create thermals, but I think most importantly, we usually have pretty steady winds. So you want to use, you know, like the Onyx map, it now has a wind meter and you can check. You can go on, you know, weather.com, whatever app you use, and just know that, hey, the wind's blowing out of the southwest predominantly at, you know, 8 miles an hour. Use that to your advantage. As far as glassing country and finding country, I don't worry about the wind as much until I find an animal that I want to try and kill or go get a better look at. And then I go, okay, what's the wind doing? Most of my glassing, so this is kind of a side note, but from a rifle hunting perspective, I always say I never want to get inside of 300 yards of a deer that I want to kill. Well, that's kind of hard if you're a bow hunter because, you know, you got to be 40, 50 yards or closer. But my mentality is I want to stay away from any deer that I'm hunting, whether it's a bow or a rifle, until it's time. I don't want those deer to ever know that I'm in the country. I want to be able to position myself like a sniper up on position, looking for my target without the target knowing that I'm there. Then once I go, okay, that's a buck. Normally guys just take off after a buck. I need to watch a buck for, you know, 2 or 3 days and try and figure out, okay, he always goes by the point of that ridge, or he always goes by that big mesquite tree, or they always go by those big group of ironwoods. I'm more of a guy that likes to take a super tactical approach of, I'm willing to sit here for a day or two and pattern this buck and figure out the most efficient way, the most effective way to kill this deer. And I think if people would be a little more patient and observe more and just chase after them less, their chance of, you know, their shot opportunity is going to go way up.
Okay. That's excellent. So I was going to actually ask for parting thoughts, but I think that's probably a good spot to, unless you have something additional, but I mean, that's a pretty good piece of.
Well, the only other thing I would add is, you know, Arizona is an unbelievable state as far as hunting opportunities and the ability to come out and hunt OTC deer, which a lot of guys can also get a corresponding javelina tag, not over the counter, so to speak, but there is a pretty liberal draw where you can actually put in for javelina tags. So in the month of January, you can be hunting deer, both coos and mule deer, and hunting javelina at the same time. And quite honestly, you could be hunting quail, so bring your shotgun. So it's an unbelievable time, especially when people are in the Midwest and, you know, back east and some of the, you know, northern rocky states and stuff where it's really, really cold. Our weather is great. It's, you know, cool in the morning and warm during the day. It's a phenomenal time to be out in the desert. So, you know, highly recommend anyone coming out, come hunt them during the peak of the rut. And, you know, if you don't end up getting one or getting some shots, you'll definitely see deer and definitely kind of be in the game and, you know, figure it out for sure.
Yeah. I thought I read the other day on the Arizona Parks and Wildlife page, is there leftover javelina tags, or do you know, are they gone?
There is. I don't know what units, but every year there's units that go under prescribed or subscribed, I guess would be the word. And there's always some leftover javelina tags. I think you can go on Arizona Game and Fish website and find out what those are, and pick up a javelina tag. And I want to say there might be a couple of OTC units, but don't quote me on that. But you know, definitely, look at, you know, planning out and come year after year, it's a deal where you could have a pig tag, a deer tag and, you know, go shoot some quail all in the same month. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is super awesome. Okay. Well, I think I was going to wrap it up, but I want to add in a note here. So we get a lot of questions on the Backcountry Rookies about optics, and we use good optics, but we don't use the best optics. You know, we use what we can afford that's what we use. But I want to direct people, if you're asking about optics, Jay and Cody Nielsen from Go Hunt have a series or multiple. I don't know if they're all in a series or not, but you guys have multiple shows, podcasts that are all about optics. And I just want to point that out because they're really, really good and they're full of information. So,
yeah, you know, something to add to that, Chad Cody is an amazing, just incredible source of knowledge of when it comes to optics, and he's a phenomenal glasser. And, yeah, I appreciate you mentioning that. We try and, you know, answer as many glassing questions as we can. We try and answer, you know, down to the nitty gritty of basic optics questions and, you know, differentiating between different spotting scopes and rifle scopes and binoculars and tripods and all of that from a techie standpoint, and you know, from a practical standpoint too, of using a lot of that gear and what works best for us and, you know, things that we've heard. And so yeah, I appreciate you covering that. We typically do one or two a month of, you know, answering guys Q&A's on optics. And so Cody at Go Hunt just does a phenomenal job with that for sure.
Yeah, he's good. And that's everything, tripods. It's related to everything optics. So check that out. Go through. I think I Googled it the other day, or I've searched it, and I think I just searched J. Scott Optics and it popped up with a whole series of them. So if you're interested in optics, that's a really good resource. And with that, Jay, what's your, well, I already said it, but I'll let you say it. What's your Instagram and how do people get in touch with you if they want to ask questions?
For sure. It's so at J. Scott Outdoors on Instagram. You can send me a direct message. I appreciate any questions. I try and answer all the questions myself, obviously, and right away. And for whatever reason, if I don't get back to you on a question, it's only because I'm out scouting and putting in the hours, really pounding the hills. But I try and, you know, spend a couple hours every evening responding and answering emails and questions. You can at J. Scott Outdoors is probably the best way. And I just appreciate you having me on the podcast and appreciate the shout outs for my podcast that you gave. And, you know, it's something that I really enjoy helping others. The biggest compliment for me is when I get a photo and someone says they learned something and it helped them have a better hunt. That's what I do this for. And really enjoy talking, hunting and fishing, and it's just an amazing opportunity for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for what you do. Definitely. I know I've gained a lot of information just from your show. So
awesome.
I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks, Jay. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Thanks for having me on. God bless. Okay.
All right. You too. All right. Thanks to Jay for coming on. That was awesome. I had a lot of fun just interacting and talking about that and then reviewing and going through those Instagram feeds. And I certainly have a much better idea of how I'm going to approach my hunting style for one, and then my glassing points and all of that. So in between the time that Jay and I recorded this show and the time that it releases, and definitely by the time I hit Arizona, I've already been digging, just crushing Onyx maps and digging through it and trying to find those spots that I want to get into, and, you know, really doing a lot of that map recon before I go out there. And then up until the point where we drive out, we're going to be doing the same thing. So we're really looking forward to that hunt. So thanks to Jay for coming on and giving us some insight, talking to us a little bit about hunting out there in Arizona. And I just want to remind everybody, check out our social media. We're out there at Backcountry Rookies. Pretty much Backcountry Rookies will find our Facebook, Instagram. There might be a Twitter page. I don't even know that for sure. There used to be a long time ago. And then, we have the Backcountry Rookies Nation on Facebook. And that's our private group. And I want to say we're pushing 1,800-ish, almost 1,900 members in that private group. So it's growing, and I'm starting to see a lot of people that are really connecting and coming together on that group. And we're super happy to have that going. It's a good way. It's actually a good way to kind of keep up with what's happening on the podcast too. So occasionally I'll push out information on the Backcountry Rookies Nation, or I'll ask questions looking for information. And I usually go there first. And if I don't get anything, and then I'll push it out to Instagram and the big Facebook page and all that stuff. So anyway, check that out. And again, at J Scott Outdoors, you guys already have all of that. You can find Jay pretty much anywhere. And then we talked a lot about Go Hunt, so make sure you're hitting up Go Hunt. Don't forget to use that code Rookies whenever you sign up for the Insider program. You'll get $50 in store credit, which you can use towards the purchase of anything you want in the Go Hunt store. There you go. That's all I got. Make sure you're turning in those stories for the hunting story giveaway. You only got a limited time left, like I said in the beginning. Very, very short window to get that turned in. You only got about 4 days left from the time this releases. So December 15th at midnight, that shuts it down. It's all over after that. Rules, all of the information that you need, prize packages, everything that you're going to need is all on the website, backcountryrookies.com. And there is a hunting story giveaway tab. And you just click on that tab and it tells you exactly how to enter, all the rules, the prize packages are outlined, everything you're going to need on there. So if you're questioning how to enter, I'll tell you this, it's pretty easy. It's 1,000 words or less, roughly 1,000 words or less. We've gotten some stories that are pretty long, and it's okay. We're still accepting them. We're just not accepting big novels. And you send that in to tell us your favorite, your hunting story over the last couple of years, archery or rifle. And then we have a prize package for each one. We have a rifle package and we have a archery package. And you can find those at backcountryrookies.com. There you go. Go check it out. That's all I got for this week. Come back next week. We got a fun show with my buddy Drew Trujillo up there in Colorado. All right, out of here.